human impact. The overwhelmingly most important human population problem for the world as a whole is not the high rate of population increase in poor third world countries, although that is the problem most discussed. Instead, the biggest problem is the increase in total human impact as the result of rising third world living standards and of third world individuals moving to the first world and adopting first world living standards. There are many optimists who argue that the world could support double its human population, and who consider only the increase in human numbers and not the average increase in per capita impact. But I have not met anyone who seriously argues that the world could support 12 times its current impact, although an increase of that factor would result from all third world inhabitants adopting first world living standards. Even if the people of China alone achieved a first world living standard while everyone else's living standard remained constant, that would double our human impact on the world. People in the third world aspire to first world living standards. They develop that aspiration through watching television, seeing advertisements for first world consumer products sold in their countries, and observing first world visitors to their countries. They are encouraged in that aspiration by first world and United Nations development agencies, which hold out to them the prospect of achieving their dream if they will only adopt the right policies, like balancing their national budgets, investing in education and infrastructure, and so on. But no one at the UN or in first world governments is willing to acknowledge the dream's impossibility. The unsustainability of the third world's maintaining current first world living standards, even if it were to attain them. What will happen when it finally dawns on all those people in the third world that current first world standards are unreachable for them, and that the first world refuses to abandon those standards for itself? Life is full of agonizing choices based on trade-offs, but that's the cruelest trade-off that we shall have to resolve. Encouraging and helping all people to achieve a higher standard of living, without thereby undermining that standard through overstressing global resources. I have described these 12 sets of problems as separate from each other. In fact, they are linked. One problem exacerbates another, or makes its solution more difficult. Our world society is presently on a non-sustainable course, and any of our 12 problems of non-sustainability would suffice to limit our lifestyle within the next several decades. They are like time bombs with fuses of less than 50 years. For example, destruction of accessible lowland tropical rainforest outside national parks will be complete around the world, except perhaps for parts of the Amazon Basin and Congo Basin, within 25 years. At current rates, we shall have depleted or destroyed most of the world's remaining marine fisheries, depleted clean or cheap or readily accessible reserves of oil and natural gas, and approach the photosynthetic ceiling within a few decades. Global warming is projected to have reached a degree centigrade or more, and a substantial fraction of the world's wild animal and plant species are projected to be endangered or past the point of no return within a half century. People often ask, what is the single most important environmental population problem facing the world today? A flip answer would be, the single most important problem is our concern with identifying the single most important problem. Because if we solved 11 of the problems, but not the 12th, we would still be in trouble. We have to solve them all. The world's environmental problems will get resolved, in one way or another, within the lifetimes of the children and young adults alive today. The only question is whether they will become resolved in pleasant ways of our own choice or in unpleasant ways not of our choice, such as warfare, genocide, starvation, disease epidemics, and collapses of societies. While all of those grim phenomena have been endemic to humanity throughout our history, their frequency increases with environmental degradation, population pressure, and the resulting poverty and political instability. An outcome less drastic than a worldwide collapse might merely be the spread of Rwanda-like or Haiti-like conditions to many more developing countries, while we first-world inhabitants retain many of our first-world amenities but face a future with which we are unhappy, beset by chronic terrorism, wars, and disease outbreaks. But it is uncertain whether the first world could retain its separate lifestyle in the face of desperate waves of immigrants fleeing from collapsing third world countries in numbers much larger than the current unstoppable influx. I'm reminded again of how I picture the end of Garter Cathedral Farm and its splendid cattle barn on Greenland, overwhelmed by the influx of Norse from poorer farms where all the livestock had died or been eaten. But before we let ourselves give way to this one-sidedly pessimistic scenario, let's examine further the problems facing us and their complexities. This will bring us, I feel, to a position of cautious optimism. Most environmental problems involve detailed uncertainties that are legitimate subjects for debate. In addition, however, there are many reasons that are commonly advanced to dismiss the importance of environmental problems, and that are, in my opinion, not well informed. These objections are often posed in the form of simplistic one-liners. Here are a few of the commonest ones. The environment has to be balanced against the economy. This one-liner puts the truth exactly backwards. Environmental messes cost us huge sums of money both in the short run and in the long run. Cleaning up or preventing those messes saves us huge sums in the long run and often in the short run as well. In caring for the health of our surroundings, just as of our bodies, it is cheaper and preferable to avoid getting sick than to try to cure illnesses after they have developed. Just think of the financial costs resulting from people getting sick or dying from environmental toxins, cleanup costs for toxic chemicals, the steep increase in fish prices due to depletion of fish stocks, and the value of farmland damaged or ruined by erosion and salinization. It adds up to a few $100 million per year here, tens of billions of dollars there, another $1 billion over here, and so on for hundreds of different problems. The value of one statistical life in the U.S., that is, the cost to the economy resulting from the death of an average American whom society has gone to the expense of rearing and educating, but who dies before a lifetime of contributing to the national economy, is usually estimated at around $5 million. Even if one takes the conservative estimate of annual U.S. deaths due to air pollution as 130,000, then deaths due to air pollution cost us about $650 billion per year. That illustrates why the U.S. Clean Air Act of 1970, although its cleanup measures do cost money, has yielded estimated net health savings of about $1 trillion per year due to saved lives and reduced health costs.